community first, music always. Vectis Radio DAB brightens your days.
We've got a special guest in the studio. Normally he's here on a Friday night between 6 and 7. And we know him as a radio presenter, and he's obviously done radio for many, many years. But he's also an author. So welcome, Mark Ovenden. How are you?
Thank you, very good, thank you.
And I mean, I don't know where to start. I know that I've got a few books on my shelf of yours at home, but they're not like any other books, are they?
They're a bit unusual. Geeky, I think, is the word you'd talk about, really.
Well, I was going to use the term interesting.
Oh, thank you.
Because I have books read to me. I'm big with Audible, and I don't think you could read this one to me.
They do contain a lot of images, because they're basically about cartography and design of transport systems.
So the book is Mapping Britain's Railways, mm-hmm. and we'll come to, you know, all of that in a moment. But first of all, why and when did this happen?
I think it's probably the fault of my mum and dad, who would thrust maps at us when we were kids to try and keep us quiet. So, for example, on the tube, when I used to live in London, my mum would give me a copy of the tube map to stop being so fidgety, and I'd be engrossed in it completely and looking at this wonderful map and couldn't work out why it was so brilliant and easy to use. And the same in the back of the car with me and my sister. They would give us their old road atlases and things, and then we'd use those as a basis to spot things out the window and just be fascinated by maps.
And you've taken all of that and now sort of thought, right, okay, I'm gonna create my own books.
Well, for a while I went off to do things like working in the media and that kind of thing, but then I'd been collecting these maps for a long, long time. So I had the maps of London Underground, and then someone gave me a map of the Paris Metro, and I thought, that's odd, it's very different. I mean, obviously it's a different city, but the design's very different. And then someone gave me a map of the Barcelona Metro and then the New York Subway, and they all had their lovely idiosyncratic differences. So I ended up with quite a big collection of these maps, and this is all before the internet. And people would say to me, oh, Mark, we're going off to Washington or wherever it was. You've got a map of the system. I said, yes, I've got one. So I'd then lend them my collection, and they'd come back all squashed and dog-eared and covered in coffee. And I'd think to myself, well, surely there must be somewhere in the world where there's a collection of all these maps all in one place. There wasn't. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do a book about it. And that's how it all started.
Brilliant. So you've got books on not just in the UK, but in London, up and down the country, France, America, and so on. So you're an expert. When it comes down to trains itself, then, when you look at our system and other systems, how do they compare? You mentioned there was a big change, big difference between France and our system. So what is the difference?
Well, there's loads of differences. I mean, don't forget we were the first people to build proper train networks anywhere. That's why we just recently celebrated 200 years of the railways, the Stockton and Darlington in 1825. So we started the whole train thing off in the UK. We also had the first underground railway, which was built in 1863 in London. But these ideas obviously were international and got copied, and so different countries around the world did copy what we were doing and also had their own adaptations. So, for example, we had a standard gauge, the gap between the railways, which they rumoured to be based on the backside of a horse, how a horse goes down the road. That's how wide apart the tracks were going to be. Other countries did different widths, but eventually many of them adopted what's called a standard gauge, so they're always the kind of same width. So that's come from the UK. Same with the idea of developing a diagram for a transit system. That really came from the first London Underground diagram that was released in 1933 by Harry Beck. That idea has been copied around the world too.
Wow, I've got loads of things I've got to ask you, and it's just opened up lots and lots of things in my mind. It really has. So you mentioned that there are different sizes between the rails and in other countries, and that for a long time didn't really matter because we weren't connected to any other railway. But now we are, I guess. How does it go from English to French size then? Or is there something magical that happens in the middle?
Amazingly, we do have the same gauge as France, so that was easy, but it wasn't easy crossing Europe. I mean, there used to be maps produced of all European railways, but they kind of lied, because when you got to a certain border, you would then have to get off of a train and get on another train. And then in more recent times, they invented a way to mechanically change the width of the wheels, so you'd pull into this kind of strange siding, and engineering would widen or narrow the wheels up so that you could carry on the same train. So there's all those issues to deal with when it came to international travel.
Fascinating, absolutely fascinating. It just opens up all sorts of things. When we went from, you know, through the tunnel, that must have been a real game changer. How fascinated were you by that?
Oh, the Channel Tunnel is an amazing piece of engineering, and not long after it opened, really, I ended up going off to live in Paris for about 6 years, so I used to have to use it a lot. And it's just such a game changer, isn't it? It's wonderful to be able to get on a train in the centre of England and get off in the centre of France. Just brilliant. And being a bit of a sort of lightly environmentally friendly person, I liked the idea that you could take a train rather than a plane. If you can take the train, why not do that?
Yeah, absolutely, I'm with you on that. So if you were to bought a book 30 years ago with all your maps on, how different would they look to the one that you've just brought out?
Well, the book we've just brought out now celebrates diagrams from right even before there were even any railways. We found a map from 1822 by a guy called Thomas Gray, who envisaged the idea of a network in Britain before they had even built any railways. And he just drew a straight line between like London and Portsmouth or London and Edinburgh, imagining that one day there would be a railway track there. So that was like the first railway diagram before they'd even built any railways. So we kind of go from there right the way through to the present day on how maps of railways developed in Britain. And there's some beautiful ones in there, some very rare ones that we found, and some which are, you know, pretty well known to people as well.
But I would imagine lots and lots of changes with regards to stations. I guess really when they're set in concrete, there's not going to be that many changes, is there?
Well, it's amazing how there are great similarities between what was done in Victorian times and wonderful differences. So one of the biggest things we can do now is colour printing. And when that took off from the turn of the 20th century, we could make much more beautiful maps and posters of anything, but particularly for the railways. And of course, the railways were very important in developing marketing and advertising. And because they were all private companies, they were all competing with each other. So they were all trying to tell all the passengers or their potential passengers, hey, come and use our railway because our system goes direct and is the fastest and shortest and quickest between London and Manchester or whatever, when there were two or three companies competing, all saying the same things. So they kind of used maps as marketing to try and convince people that their routes were more direct.
Fascinating. Mapping Britain's Railways is your book. It's out now. You can get hold of it now. It's got your name on it and also Andrew Smithers as well. Tell us a bit about Andrew Smithers.
Andrew is a cartographer, and he was the guy that was responsible for drawing and steering the map of Britain's railways that was available for the last sort of 12 years. So he's a very, very wise guy, very switched on, a real wonderful finickety designer. You know, you need to have designers who are really, really care about their profession. So he will see a corner or an angle or a piece of text and say, no, that's not right. It's got to be like this. He's a wonderful brain full of how to do good maps. I sort of not quite so good at them. I just like the look of them, and occasionally I experiment with a few and do my own, but they're not very good. Whereas he was an absolute professional.
Yeah, but you'd want him to be, wouldn't you? Because otherwise, if they're not, you could end up somewhere else, couldn't you? It's not quite right. So the design history of a nation on track is now available. How do we get hold of it?
Well, it's available in all good bookshops, Ian, but also online. And there's a really good company called, I think it's called bookshop.org, if you want to not use the big American companies. It's available there. It's also available at places like Waterstones and some of the independent shops too.
How many books have you brought out?
I think that's about my 20th now. And yeah, they started in 2003, and where are we? Over 20 years later, I've done about 20 books, and some of them have been converted into other languages as well. So I think I've had one in Dutch, one in German, one in French, one in Spanish, one in Japanese, and one in Chinese.
Right, okay. But this is just focusing on Britain's railways?
Yes.
Okay, and you must have other books that is focusing on, you know, elsewhere?
Yes, previously I've done a book about railway maps from around the world, and I'm hoping to do some more with the publisher, the British Library, on other aspects of British rail design.
Does that mean you have to go to all these countries and go up and down on their trains?
Wouldn't that be great? Especially if they paid me to do it.
is that the sort of thing you'd
love to, except that, you know, then you have to expend a lot of air miles and pollution getting to the farthest flung parts of the world, and I think my time doing that's pretty much over. But I would love to have been to more of the places that I write about. Nowadays you have to do it on the internet or Google Earth or whatever.
How do we compare to other trains around the world? Are we up there with the best of them? Have we got the best system ever?
No, but
you were nodding yes.
Well, I was nodding along because it's an excellent question. But we used to be. I mean, we used to have thousands of miles more track. I mean, even here on the island, we know that there used to be fantastic train service between Cowes and Newport, and Newport to Ryde, and the other ones that are around the island as well. You could get over to Freshwater on train. So many lines were cut in the 1960s, which is a huge shame. But amazingly, we weren't the only country to cut the trains. If you look at somewhere like America, if you look at a map of America, you'll realise that there are lots of places in the central part of America, same in Asia, and those places were only possible because of the railways. So we built all of the continents, we opened up all the continents because of the railways, and then unfortunately, quite a few years later, they shut many of them down, so they have to rely on trains, they have to rely on cars or planes, which is a bit of a shame, really.
He's got a lot to answer for, hasn't he?
Beaching?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I mean, we've been spending a lot of time with young people recently because we're doing a lot of podcasts. As you know, you're getting involved with the project, and it's all about the things we have here on the Isle of Wight they should be proud of. And people used to say, you know, and they still do, they come in and say, this place is Little London. Why was it Little London? It was Little London because you had trains going through it, selling, you know, dropping off stuff at Newport and so on. You had boats floating up the river and so on. So, you know, that disappearing was. I mean, I think you called it a little sad. I think it's worse than that. I mean, it's a travesty, don't you think?
Well, it was complete destruction, really, yeah, in many places. I mean, Little London here, for example, used to look like... You've seen the film Oliver Twist.
Yes.
Where they're all on the docksides doing their picking their pockets. And you're covered in all these huge big warehouses and wharfs. That's what Little London used to look like, with the station serving it. And so you're absolutely right. We've lost such a lot because of beaching and other cutbacks. And wouldn't it be great if we could at least bring some of them back? They're doing one right now, actually, up in Bristol. They're reopening the line from Bristol to Portishead, which was a very late closure, actually, in the 1960s. And they're now redoing that one. So let's hope we can get some more bits of railway on the island eventually.
Yeah, that's I mean, there was talk of it a little while ago, joining up the steam railway and the electric. I mean, that isn't that a different size anyway, so that's going to give us the tracks are they the same?
The tracks are fine. The problem is the electrification, because they're not supposed to extend any more third rail systems because it's supposedly not quite so safe.
Yeah.
But I don't see that would be a problem going down to Ventnor, for example. I mean, it used to go to Ventnor, so why can't they just extend down there and put the third rail down? But then that might take away a few people's gardens in Wroxall, so people wouldn't like that.
Okay. just coming back to the book then, this book is available. You've only showed me a couple of pages. You've given me a copy of it, so thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I love looking at things like that because I'm not really a big reader, but I'll look at diagrams and pictures. And let's be honest, when we get on that train and we see, you can see the whole map of, I mean, it's a straight line. Whether they are, I'm guessing they are straight lines, are they? They're not at all.
No, you've picked up an excellent point there about diagrams and how we need diagrams to help us navigate complicated systems. So inside train carriages particularly, many of the lines are shown as a simple straight line because you go that station follows that station follows that station. Obvious. But of course on the ground they're much more curvy tracks. And that's kind of the point of the book really. We've had wonderful designers who simplified the curvature and the meanders of all these lines to make it look a lot more direct and a lot simpler to use. And therefore more people come and use the railway, which obviously is a good thing. And so diagrams are a really, really important way of showing how one place is linked to another, and that's what the book's all about.
Wow, because I was on a train recently, as we were saying in the green room out there, and I went from one end of it to the other, and I didn't see... I mean, you can't see you going around corners and curves and things like that. You just think, and you look on the train on the ceiling there, it's got the map there, and you think, yeah, it's a straight line. I didn't feel like I was going around any twists. The journey that I took, is that fairly straight or not then?
No, no, not at all.
Wow.
The journey that you took, which was from North London to East London, basically goes south into the centre of London, then comes back out again and heads north until it gets to the east. And that is shown as a straight line inside the tube carriage,
yeah,
which is exactly what you need to have on your journey. You need to know where one line intersects with another one and where you can get off and change trains and which line to get on. That's the beauty of diagrams, and that's why I think that they're so important. They need to be celebrated in a book like this.
So do you know what? I mean, you can get hold of this book, and I say it looks really fascinating. I can't wait to kick you out so I can have a look at it. Seriously, go through it all, because you look at maps and you look at things and you think, I didn't realise, when you picture it in your mind and you try and work out where something is, and then you look at it in a map and you think, well, I had that somewhere completely different.
Well, there's that famous story, isn't there, about the London Underground map, that if a tourist comes and says, oh, how do I get from Regent's Park to Great Portland Street, then you could send them on the tube, you know, go down the Bakerloo and then change to this line and then change to that and then come back again, or you could just walk, it's about 100 yards.
Yeah, that's the other thing that we noticed we were in Westminster recently, and we noticed that everything was so close, and we thought we'd get the train there, and we get the train, and we didn't miss that one, so we walked in, and we thought, hang on a minute, we're going to get the train there, we're going to get off three stops, and there it is, only 100 yards. It's really ridiculous, but you don't realise just how close things are in London.
Well, they are, but also that you do need the tube for people, you know, making those longer journeys. But if you go to visit London, you don't need to get on the tube or a bus even, because you can walk from, say, for example, Waterloo, where most of us will get dropped off at. You can walk into the West End just over the Embankment Bridge. Easy.
Yeah. Now look, the book would have taken how long to put together?
Oh, it was the best part of a year.
So the best part of a year, you're doing all sorts of... How does that work then? Because I guess if you're writing a book, you know, you might handwrite it, you might type it, and so on. How does the process work in this case?
Well, nowadays, obviously, a lot of the research for any book is done online. But if you go back when I started, then you'd have to go to libraries, and you'd have to order up archives. You'd have to know the archives were there. You'd have to look them up, for example, in a card index and say, oh, yes, I want this. It's on shelf XYZ at the back there. And they'll take about a day to get the thing to you. And then you've got to open everything out and look through. Oh, that's quite interesting. And use that in your research. Nowadays, so much more of it's done online. But it's still very, very time consuming. And anyone you speak to has done any kind of book, anyone who says they did it in half a day is probably telling a few porcupines, because it's usually a lot of work and research these days.
Or it won't be very good.
Yeah.
So things will be wrong. So what happens if somebody decides that they're going to open up another train station? I'm guessing there have been some new stations. So does that cause... Oh, crikey, now I've got to rewrite the damn thing. I mean, how does that work?
Well, that's what my co-author was having to deal with when he was doing the national UK map for a dozen years. There would always be new services and extensions and train operating companies going down and new ones starting up, so he was constantly busy doing that. And of course maps have to be updated. I mean, there's not much use of a 20-year-old map, as I think someone quite close to your heart realised when you were recently in London. Yeah. You may know where things used to run, but they don't always run there. So yeah, it's always worth trying to check, like, if you're going on a journey, what the most latest version available is.
So you I mean, does this make you an expert on maps? I guess it does, but can you go into London like and not have to look at things? You just know exactly where you're going.
Sometimes I do, and sometimes I have to consult the map, and sometimes I get it wrong. I remember getting completely lost on the Paris Metro when I was writing a book about the Paris Metro. So it's easily done. I mean, all of us need a little map every now and again. But my big plea is to the transport operators, please keep the maps designed well and printed, because loads of people can't use or don't want to use or don't get a signal on their handheld device. So if you've got a map on the wall of a station or even outside a station, so you can kind of work out where you're going to go, that's all for the better, I think. It helps us to plan better journeys.
So how does it compare when we're underground and we're using it? Because there's different colours, isn't there? Which is a bit of a shame, because I'm colourblind. So that's probably the reason why I'd probably get lost in London, because I didn't see the colours, but they're all named and so on. How does that compare with France? Do they have that kind of system in place as well?
Absolutely, and map makers these days have got to take in mind the idea of people who perhaps don't have perfect 20/20 vision and perfect colour vision. So if you look carefully at a lot of these maps, even if you do have some problems with your colour vision, sometimes you can just about see that there is a change in shade, and that's been done deliberately to help people who have problems with their vision. And they also employ many other methods to help people as well, like, for example, on the Paris Metro, they have more lines than we do in London, because they also cut and they colour code them all. So the first map that they did which colour-coded them all, the colours were so similar to each other that people used to get lost and used to get off at the wrong station and end up going, oh, la la, je suis perdu. And so they had to work on the colours to make sure that they had ones that were easy to see for people who had colour vision problems.
And you actually speak French, don't you?
No, je ne parle pas le français.
And how long did you stay there for?
Oh, I was there 6 years.
Right.
And I used to come back to the island every Christmas to see my family, and more often than that, and see them all down here. And it was kind of strange coming back from the French environment, on the Channel Tunnel, of course, and then back down to the island, to be presented with having to think in English again. It was quite peculiar.
How does it feel when you've worked for a whole year on something that must have consumed your life, to now see it as a, you know, it's now a book, it's now finished and other people can look at it and so on? How does it feel?
There's a moment when it first arrives and you unpack it and you hold it in your hand and you think, you took so much of my time. No, you think, oh, this is amazing. I'm so pleased. I'm so, so pleased. And it's an incredible feeling. And anyone who's lucky enough out there to have an idea for a book and to do their own book, you will have that feeling on your, certainly on your first book, but probably every book you ever do, because that first moment when you hold it in your hand is just, you can't compare it with anything else. It's wonderful.
And you know, I don't know whether you, it's, is there any mistakes in it? Is there any, because you know that it's got to be absolutely 100% perfect.
You ask a good question, don't you, Ian? Sometimes little mistakes do creep in. Even though you've proofread it and proofread it and proofread it so many times, little tiny mistakes will creep in. We haven't heard of any yet on this one.
Right.
But it's very new, so somebody were bound to pipe up and say, do you realise that you typed 1872 when you should have meant 1873? So these things do happen.
Oh, yeah,
I apologise.
You can allow that. I mean, it's just say, for instance, if it's a map and it's, you know, slightly not, it's not there, it's over to the left a bit, or you miss one out or something like that.
I did once put the same picture in twice in a book,
right,
and didn't get picked up, but that's only happened once.
Okay, excellent. So, this is how long has it been out for?
Oh, just last week.
And you should mention, because I know you like to hide it all and keep it under, you know. Well, just, you know, there's some good facts here that we should get out there, and that is it's quite high in certain charts book wise, isn't it?
Well, thank you for asking. Yes, it is. It's doing okay with the Amazon selling charts. I mean, there's a lot of books on there, something like 2 million books. And at one point we got to number 1,400 and something, and it's number one in about 4 or 5 categories, in, like, for example, railway history or pictorial maps and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's doing quite well, and I'd be so happy if people were interested in reading about it and joining in the conversation about why we need good wayfinding in transport.
Yeah, absolutely right. But if I hadn't mentioned that, you wouldn't have brought it up, would you? No, but that's a fantastic achievement. Couple of million books, and you're like, you got up to almost in the thousands.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, there was one book a couple of years ago that got in the top 100 of all Amazon books, and that was in America. So I was quite proud about that. Yeah.
What book was that?
That was called Transit Maps of the World, and that was the one that showed all the different metro maps from around the world. Yeah, that did quite well. I was,
and that's
quite
still available now, is it?
It's still available now, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Just tell us again how we can get hold of this book.
So have a look online. It's called Mapping Britain's Railways, The Design History of a Nation on Track by Mark Ovenden and Andrew Smithers.
It's brilliant. I can't wait to have a look through later. I really can't. I think it looks like an amazing book. Probably the best book someone's ever given me, because I don't read. This is perfect. I don't have to read too much. I can look at the diagrams. Yes, there's some detail in there as well. Would you ever be able to turn it into an audio book?
I think it would be tricky to do an audio book of that particular one, but I did a recent other book for somebody else, which was all text. It was my first full text.
Yeah.
Story, which was all the big story of how I ended up doing maps and cartography, and the stories about getting thrust maps when I was a kid, and that was called Unseen Railway Story, something like that. So, but that's on my webpage as well. But I you can turn those into audiobooks, but it's more tricky with picture books.
It's on his webpage, which he hasn't mentioned his website either, has he? So, do you want to mention the website too?
MarkOvenden.com, OVENDEN.
Do you want to thank Adam now for coming in?
Serviced on the Isle of Wight by the lovely Liam from Island Web Services.
Oh, right. OK, excellent. So what's the name of that website again?
MarkOvenden.com.
I'm going to check it out later.
Thank you.
great guest. Thank you for coming in, Mark. It's really good to see you, and you're back on the radio again tomorrow.
Yes, the Catchcast continues, Britain's only weekly FM radio show about transport and design.
What have we got tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're talking to one of the most important BAFTA-winning TV directors in history, a guy called Jeff Posner, who used to direct things like Victoria Wood and Jude Waters, both of whom are big train fans.
Fantastic. Tune in tomorrow, 6 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Or next Monday or Tuesday, is it on?
Monday evenings at 9.
Well, you see, you should be programme controller. You remember when it's on.
Too busy doing books.